Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. The Mark Reardon Show.
The man's got guts. He's got oranges the size of beach balls.
I don't care what corporate media outlets say. I don't care what Hollywood says. I don't care what big corporations say. Here I stand. I'm not backing down.
This is the Mark Reardon Show.
Fred just reminded we have a new soundbite from Senator Kennedy, who says the CR is as big as Costco. And we're going to talk about the continuing resolution and funding of the government as we move along here this afternoon. But Fred, by the way, he's the guy who shapes the show, right? We know that.
How about old Fred Bottenheimer over there, ladies and gentlemen?
But I had to call an audible because as I'm popping around here, true story, about 40 minutes ago, not even 40 minutes ago, I see this story that Joe Holloman wrote just cleared 42 minutes ago on the St. Louis Post-Dispatch website about the county council. And this is all related to Dennis Hancock, who is my county councilman, and this allegation that he's a criminal and should not be on the council because he tried to hire his daughter-in-law. But this has got even crazier. And the best person to describe crazy is another crazy person, our friend Jane Duker. Sorry, that was the best I can do. How are you this afternoon?
I am doing good.
Just
when you think this nonsense can't get any worse.
This is nuts. Explain what happened here. And by the way, one of the hooks for Holloman in writing this story is, and we know this, Jane, because we've talked, the county council is never in 100% agreement, but they're in 100% agreement on something here.
Absolutely. And this is because Wesley Bell and Sam Page have pursued criminal charges against the county clerk in relation to the Hancock matter. And they're accusing her of a felony and three misdemeanors related to the fact that as she's like the HR person for the council. And so with regard to the potential hiring of Dennis Hancock's stepdaughter, after the hullabaloo all came out where it was like, hey, this is nepotism. It violates the Constitution, blah, blah, blah. His stepdaughter wrote a letter saying, I don't want the employment. I don't want to be paid. I want to volunteer. That's the story. So as being in part of the workflow of the computer system for personnel and for payroll, the county clerk was asked to accept or reject the employment of this woman.
Right.
Okay, because that's part of her job. And she pressed reject. And the payroll department, I think, was all in an uproar talking about, well, we have to pay this woman. I mean, it's federal law. And, you know, the clerk's like, the woman has said she does not want the employment. She does not want the money. So I have to reject this. If this is unconstitutional, I'm going to reject the employment.
Right.
And so she did. So now they're claiming that she forged documents because she didn't say that she was employed. She just rejected the employment. And so now they're saying she forged documents, tampered with computer, and made false declarations. What this clerk did or did not do in the computer system is not going to be the evidence that determines whether a quo warranto would lie. And here's the thing. This prosecutor, this woman, this Rachel Smith, there's a lot of Smiths running around St. Louis County in this circle. But anyway, this Rachel Smith is not an assistant prosecutor for Wesley Bell. Okay, she hasn't been hired as a prosecutor, and she was not appointed as a special prosecutor to handle this matter, like what happened when they did the quo warranto against Councilman Trakin.
But you're saying she's the one that's personally spearheading this?
Yeah.
Okay, so the other thing, I don't even know if we've mentioned this, that this is, I think, even more complicated because they took this to a freaking grand jury yesterday?
Yes, of course they took it to a grand jury. Because if there was a preliminary hearing and a judge got half
thrown
wind
out
of what they were trying,
yeah,
it would have been thrown out.
Right.
This is all leverage to make the counsel or Dennis look bad in this whole debacle. And here's the thing. This woman is not even an authorized prosecutor. And she was about to get thrown off the Cuo case, and they dismissed it. They dismissed the Cuo Verano case, but they're pursuing criminal charges against a clerk.
So here's Lisa Clancy, one of the biggest nut jobs on the council, who supports Sam Page at every turn, saying, "I was stunned, I was shocked to learn about criminal charges being sought against Valenti." And she's complaining about it. Everyone, there's nobody on the council that's supporting this.
Oh, no. I mean, Tim Fitch came out.
Talk about that.
Paige and Bell, I mean, they are sadly mistaken if they think people, I mean, the support for Diane is bipartisan. It's very, very intense. And everyone thinks this is the biggest overreach and abuse of power that they've ever seen.
It is. You mentioned Fitz. So he's regularly on the show, former St. Louis County Police Chief and my former councilman as well. He goes, "The only logical purpose for doing this is to put the squeeze on Ms. Valenti in the hopes that she gives up some information, if there's even any to give." Do you agree with that, that they're trying to squeeze her?
I mean, they're just humiliating this woman. She has nothing to do with this. Nothing she did or did not do has any bearing on this Cuo Verano proceeding. This is just hateful. And everyone knows it's just hateful. And guess what? This so-called computer evidence that they told the grand jury, like, she can lie to the grand jury, and there's not a darn thing anybody can do about it. And so that was information provided by the Page administration. I mean, this doesn't get done without Bell and Page colluding. And here's the other thing.
What?
When this case was initially brought to one of the senior lawyers in the prosecutor's office, very senior, very ethical. That lawyer said, "We don't do politics here. We do law." And said, no, you're not presenting this case to the grand jury. Then this Rachel Smith woman went over this person's head, went straight to Wesley Bell. Wesley Bell himself secured the grand jury time yesterday. And then he secured it a few days ago, but it was for yesterday. And then he went on a Bahama cruise.
Well,
you can't even make this up.
No, you can't. But I mean, what are the options here? I mean, there's a lot of outrage and everything, but could the charges just be dropped? Or, I mean, I'm guessing
they could drop them.
Okay.
They could drop them, and they should. But if not, she has a lawyer, and the lawyer is going to go in and, he's going to go to a judge and say, "This is unbelievable. This is a joke." And they're probably going to get it dismissed anyway.
Jane, here's what I'm missing here. Okay, I get Sam Page, or Scam as you call him, which I like. But what's in this for Wesley at this point? Why would he?
Well, that is subject to a lot of discussion. Here's the thing. There is a discrimination lawsuit that's going to trial in January against Wesley Bell. Sam Page has control over that litigation, whether it settles, whether it doesn't settle. I'm speculating, because there has to be something really bad that Wesley is afraid of to do this for Sam Page. This does nothing for Wesley.
That's what I think. Yeah, exactly. That's why I'm confused by this. It's one of these situations where I feel like I'm missing something again. And I don't know what it is.
You are. I'm sure there's some deal. I mean, Sam hired a couple of Wesley's cronies, to keep him on the county payroll, people he couldn't take to D.C. So, I mean, there's a couple hundred grand in salary. It's hard to say, but they're using this woman, like this public servant. And this prosecutor woman, this Rachel Smith, she was fired by Kim Gardner.
That speaks volumes.
I want you to get your head around that.
Wow.
Okay? She was not a good enough prosecutor for Kim Gardner, who didn't want to prosecute. Right? Like, you can't make it in Kim Gardner's office, but Wesley Bell is going to hire you to issue an indictment against a clerk.
Yeah, by the way, not only that, but to waste resources and time before a grand jury when we have pretty realistic actual crime that's taking place in St. Louis County is disgusting. Look, save some of your energy. We're going to talk about it tomorrow on the roundtable 24 hours from now. It's a good one. It's a good story. Thank you, Jane. We'll talk tomorrow.
Alrighty.
All right, take
Bye-bye.
Care. That's, Fred, I got to tell you, I'm like, I don't get this one.
That's
I really
pretty incredible.
Don't. But if you would read the story, you know, and Holloman's the one that wrote this not too long ago, there's nobody in here. They're all outraged. Like Clancy, Shalonda Webb, everybody. Valenti's attorney says, this is not a legitimate prosecution. This is a political clown show. That's exactly what it is. It's embarrassing. Fitch called it a political witch hunt and said, you know, he sort of quoted the adage that says the prosecutor can indict a ham sandwich, which is probably what happened here. But good Lord. So Chris King, who works with Wesley's office, defends it, saying for the charges to be politically motivated, both the prosecutors and the grand jury judge would have to be unethical. No, that's not the case. That's not how it works, Chris. The prosecutor can be politically motivated, and the judge has to take the case before the grand jury. And if you're talking about, I don't know how this was presented, but if technically it's against the law to annotate something or to give your approval, you know, the law is very specific. So do they have a little carve out that they can say she broke the law? I guess they do because they got the grand jury to issue a felony case. But that is really, really something. And I didn't expect that one. So we'll talk about it on the roundtable tomorrow. Wow. Fred, we're loaded up today, aren't we? We got Carl Cannon, Washington Bureau Chief for Real Clear Politics, who is always one of my favorites, been around politics for a long time. The continuing resolution question is still up for, I guess, debate this afternoon. We're not sure exactly where this is going to take. This is another one of those things where I must admit that I'm a little confused because Mike Johnson has to be aware of what the country voted for. There's little nuggets and things in the spending
package. It's not a good look.
It's not a good look, but, you know, I don't want to defend what they're doing because let me give you some examples, okay? $625 million for geostationary Earth orbit satellite acquisition because apparently satellites are now an emergency government service. $30 million for molasses testing at U.S. ports. That's one of my favorites. I don't really know what that does, but that should probably help the economy. $220 million in block grants for weather relief in states with farms under 1,000 acres. $5.6 billion for the Virginia-class submarine program. This is actually pretty big nuclear sub program, but I mean $5.6 billion. Should we take a look at that one? $908,000 for risk reduction in the Department of Treasury. What the hell does that mean? $42.5 million for new buildings under the Agricultural Research Service, and then you know it goes on and on. Now, having said that, let me just explain. There are things in this, and this is where it gets a little tough and more nuanced. So I heard from my friend Chris Smith today. Fred, and you know Chris. Right. He was just featured on 48 Hours. He was shot in the head 3 years ago, the night before Thanksgiving. He's still, you know, trying to recover. He just underwent an experimental treatment up in Chicago. But he sends me a message saying, hey, how well do you know Ann Wagner? Well, I know her very well. He says, because Chris is recovering from a brain injury, right? And he's trying to get his body back. Part of this is the reauthorization of the Traumatic Brain Injury Act. So keep in mind that there are things, you know, and they probably like to spend a lot of money, but there are things that are tucked away in this that, you know, might be good for some people. Everybody wants their slice of the federal pie. The question is whether or not these things are debated thoroughly and put up as appropriations bills on a regular basis. This hasn't happened for a long time. Fred, you remember Paul Ryan was on the air many times, right, 12 years ago talking about the budget process. Claire McCaskill would try to defend it. They never really did an actual budget. That's what they're trying to get to. Now, I'm told that we'll talk with Carl about this. Any notion that Trump's not involved here is nonsense. Trump is very involved, all right? And he's trying to get the debt ceiling raised. I think he says he doesn't even care if it's, you know, any debt ceiling, and he wants a clean CR. So that's what the president is hoping for right now.
And explain a clean CR.
Well, there won't. It would just be the basic government spending is my understanding. But that's where I'm still a little confused because I don't know if that includes things like this traumatic brain injury fund. But the deal is that you have all these little pork projects that, you know, used to be done, I think, with what would they call that, Fred, when Roy Blunt would do this? Earmarks, right? And earmarks right. were... Roy and other people might still defend earmarks because they brought money home to the states, and some people were pretty good at that. But I think what a lot of us would like is federal government spending because it's so out of control, even on some of these minor projects. You know, $42 million in the whole scheme of things might not seem like a lot of money in a federal budget, but if we can use that $42 million elsewhere in a more effective way, these things just get out of control from year to year. And again, I think everybody knows it doesn't typically matter if it's a Republican administration or a Democrat administration. They all rubber stamp a lot of this stuff. There's nobody that actually goes through, very few people, to read what's in the project. I think in this particular case, Vivek is the one that read the details of the $1,500 or the 1,500 pages and said, wait a second here, this is outrageous, some of the stuff in here. This is not what we voted for. So it's a bad start because this is not what people in the country that voted for Trump were hoping for. On the other hand, what I would say is I think there are nuances to this. And I would also say that, you know, Trump's very involved. You have the budget deficit right now at $1.4 trillion. The current national debt is $31.5 trillion. The unfunded obligations, and now this is where it gets really big, and I've talked about this until I'm blue in the face, right? But they're not going to talk about the $75.3 trillion unfunded obligations. That's Social Security and Medicare. Social Security has $22.4 trillion. It's not funded right now. Medicare is 52.9. Well, no one's talking about that right now. Trump's even saying specifically, we're not going to do anything about Social Security. So I don't know how you really make an impact here without doing something more serious on the entitlements. But just from a optics perspective, right?
Right.
Let's get the pork out of the deficit, or not out of the deficit, but out of the budget, and try to do this the way the American people would be more approving of. All right. Well, we're going to have Carl here in just a couple of minutes. You know, the story, and I was going to start with this, Fred, and I didn't because we had Jane on, but there was actual real journalism in the Wall Street Journal this morning. It was really great, detailed reporting. No one's done it up until this point. The chronicles what happened in the last 3 years up until the point, really, of the first presidential debate that third week of June, where, you know, the staff, the administration say, oh, everything's fine. And then, you know, the wheels came off and Scott Jennings became a national treasure at that time and all these other things happened. But the Wall Street Journal dug in. They talked to a lot of different people here because some of us have said for a while, hey, wait a second. Maybe someone should do some reporting on this big cover-up that occurred in Washington. So somebody actually did that at the Wall Street Journal. I'll get you some details here as we move along as well. We got Ethan's News in the next hour. Phil Holloway from Fox. Joe Warmington from Toronto this afternoon. Our friend Dwayne Patterson and a whole lot more. I also have some great political commentary to offer here this afternoon, including a visit with our friend Carl Cannon, who is the Washington Bureau Chief for Real Clear Politics and a SWAP veteran. Carl, how are you this afternoon? Welcome back.
I'm great, Mark. I'm glad the election's over, though. I won't lie.
I know, but, you know, you can probably, maybe you and I have even talked about this, but people ask this question every once in a while. You know, I've been in this business for a long time, as have you, but it was always like that period in December right now where things were so slow, you couldn't talk about anything, no one wanted to be a guest and everything. But ever since Obama, I would always put it about 2008, that period between Thanksgiving and Christmas is still pretty active in Washington, isn't it?
Well, especially this year. We've got a president, constitutionally a president, but he's barely there. We've got the president-elect who's acting like he's already got the job and trying to control Congress, and they want to get out of town, but, you know, they're trying to borrow a bunch of money and, you know, before they go. Things are hopping here.
Yeah, so let's start with the CR and what's going on with that. There's a lot of people that are jumping on Mike Johnson right now, even folks that are calling for him to not be speaker. I was told last night that there's a good source that said the only way out is a clean CR, but the Trump is insisting that the debt ceiling be included and that they're still trying to figure out. So where is this thing and where do you think it's headed?
Well, look, those are two separate issues, really, although we get them mixed up because we shut down the government, but, you know, on a regular basis. Trump wants to raise the debt ceiling because he wants that done. He wants the Democrats to have to do that while Joe Biden's still president. And that's a pretty savvy instinct.
Yeah.
It's quite a contrast from when Trump got here the first time. He didn't know how Washington works. He knows how it works now. And he and J.D. Vance put out this statement on Thursday, said, you know, here's what we want. We want them to raise the debt ceiling, and then we want a continuing resolution that's not got all this lard in it, especially nothing that, you know, exonerates the January 6th committee, nothing that gives the State Department money that they were using to, you know, stifle and censor conservative voices in America. They,
right.
they were under Russian disinformation, but they kind of got out over their skis and went beyond their brief, let's just say. And so, yeah, he wants, but, you know, there's some stuff in there that's very popular, like this money for a bridge to replace the bridge in Baltimore. But what Trump and J.D. Vance's statement said, and this is, look, let's just keep the thing going till March, and then let's actually start debating the budget. It was an interesting development. You know, Vivek Ramaswamy ran, and he had no business running for president. He didn't know any more than Trump did. But you know what? He did something nobody does. He read the whole 1,500 pages of it and found all the stuff in it that Republicans and half the independents think they voted against. And he said, why are we doing this?
Yeah. Well, that's the confusing part, because I think when you start to go through it and you pick out some things, and look, I've done this for a while, where you can highlight some abuse and it just seems like nonsense. But is it truly, because look, Trump's involved in this and he's involved with Mike Johnson. Is it Mike Johnson not being able to, you know, maneuver this effectively, or is there more nuances? Because I guess the question would be, is this guy in trouble as far as the speakership at this point?
Well, I think he is.
Yeah.
But I have to tell you, Democrats actually still control the Senate and will until the first week of January. So this wasn't Mike Johnson's wish list. This is the minimum of what he had to do to get the Democrats to support it. So it looks like there could be a shutdown. And also, Mike Johnson may be in trouble. He may be thinking, why do I even want this job? And here's the other thing. His majority, Mark, is so thin. If what's his name? Guy from Texas, you know, Roy, Congressman
Tex Roy. Chip Roy. I'm sorry. Yeah, Chip Roy.
If Chip Roy decides to, you know, go full Matt Gaetz, and a couple of one Republican gets, you know, COVID from his grandson, and another misses his flight back to Washington, these guys could wake up one morning and Hakeem Jeffries could be the speaker. I mean, they should be very careful.
But don't you think the most likely outcome at this point is the clean CR, and then they do raise the debt ceiling?
Well, that's what they want.
Yeah.
I guess I'd have to get into be a what was that phrase that Bobby Kennedy used? A brain worm. I'd have to be a brain worm into Chuck Schumer's ear to tell you if it's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, they have until when 12:01 Saturday. Does that mean tomorrow night at midnight, basically?
Yeah, midnight Friday, when the most of us will be thinking, okay, did I get all my shopping done for Christmas? No, these guys will be thinking, can I even go home?
Yeah, I'll be thinking about hopefully Indiana beating Notre Dame in that game tomorrow night. That would be more where my thoughts would be, just because I'm a college football fan, you know?
You know what? You've asked Santa for a lot.
Yeah, I know. I don't think they can beat him, but you know what? It'd be kind of fun. And my team, Mizzou's not in it.
I agree with you.
Yeah, we didn't make the college football playoff at the University of Missouri. We were close, but we play in the it's the Music City Bowl down in Nashville. But look, I think this is going to be interesting this year. We kind of digress off of politics. Did you see, I'm sure you have, Carl, because you are an experienced veteran reporter in Washington. How about this? Some actual journalism that I would have expected in the Wall Street Journal, but some pretty damn good reporting today on all the things that kind of went wrong over the summer with Biden and how they hid a lot of this stuff and covered it up.
Mark, that story is more ominous than that. This shows that they built these steep walls around Biden, and it went back to his first year in office. I mean, this is a scandal. These people, they protected him, they gaslit the whole country for years. If you raise, and the Wall Street Journal had another story like this earlier in the summer, last summer, you may remember it. And they were attacked by people like Kamala Harris.
Oh, sure. Right,
to name one. And the White House press secretary said that it was, you know, gossip and wrong and everything. And now you got Democrats starting to say, oh, yeah, I knew that. And so we had this president for 3 years who was diminished and getting worse, and only now can you write about it, or only now are you allowed to say it? Well, look, I give the Journal credit. They've been on this story, but other people have not. And it's an indictment of the media, although it's hard. I covered that beat for 15 years. You know, the president and his family are protected at all hours by men with Uzis. You can't get in their bedroom. You can't get in the breakfast nook and listen to what they're saying. But this story in the Wall Street Journal, if this reporting is true, and I have no reason to believe it isn't, it's pretty damning of Jill Biden, I think, because she had to see this early on.
I think it is. And so I'm going to get into that a little bit more as the show moves along with some more, you know, details as well. What did you, since we're on the media topic here, what's your take on the defamation stuff and, you know, what happened with George Stephanopoulos?
You know what? I would have told you if you had asked, if I'd been on your show a week ago and you'd asked me about this, I would have said that's a frivolous lawsuit with no chance of success. And then they settled for $15 million. So they did think there was a chance of success. And their lawyers told them, look, by the cost of defending this and the appeals, and we got insurance, and we want to give George another contract, let's just make it go away. And they did. But it's a black eye for the press. And that thing where CNN has that fake Syrian prisoner, that's a black eye for the press.
I want to pause on that because I did highlight that, but let's explain that a little bit. So Clarissa Ward from CNN goes in, the Assad regime falls apart. She's looking for, actually, they're looking to see if there's an American hostage that's in this prison. They come across someone who's under a blanket. They're not even sure if it's a person. Then they bring this guy out, and he's been there for 3 months. The problem is he's really well coiffed, right? His beard is trimmed. He doesn't look like he hasn't eaten in months. And he was one of the guys that was part of the regime.
That's right. And maybe a torturer. I mean,
yeah.
And he didn't look like he'd been in prison, really. It didn't look. It was a hell of a scoop if it was true, but it wasn't true.
Oh.
And they should have done due diligence. They should have waited. They should have checked out this guy. It was exposed within a matter of days. It's just not a good look. And I got to tell you, I grew up born and raised in the media and covered the White House for 15 years, worked for the Baltimore Sun and Knight Reader newspapers and National Journal. And I was in the legacy media, but this has not been a good year for us.
No.
Your hope is that Notre Dame gets beat by Indiana. My hope for the new year is that the press gets its act together.
Well, that's my hope, too, and it has been my hope for a while. And interestingly enough, and I got to be careful, I don't want to say too much about this, but I'll tell you this, and I think you'll appreciate it, and you know, I'm going to let the audience know a little bit more of this as it evolves. But there was a story that I was going to do on my show. I had some audio from a journalism class at the University of Missouri that was pretty interesting, and the person who shared the audio with me, I thought I had permission. In the end, I didn't have permission, so I didn't use it, right? But I had reached out to the dean of the journalism school at Mizzou, my alma mater, and he actually called me back, to his credit. We had an amazing conversation today for about 20 minutes. I'm going to go. I've been a little alienated from my journalism school, Carl, because of my politics, and I expressed that. And what this guy told me was really very encouraging. Now, I hope he means it, right? And we were talking broader strokes about, you know, how we train these young journalists and where the state of the media is. And it was an encouraging conversation. I hope we have more like that. The other thing that I sent this piece to the dean, and I don't know if you've seen it, but my friend Scott Jennings has been in the news quite a bit lately.
Yeah.
And, you know, Vanity Fair did a piece because the owner of the LA Times just appointed him to the editorial board. I think that's encouraging, right? So there's some things happening that might change this legacy media industry, slowly but surely.
Yeah, I hope you're right. It's time for us to do, and I want to say us. I mean, I don't fault you and me. We've done our best. But these big, you know, the New York Times, Washington Post, LA Times, the networks, the news magazines, you know, we've missed something. We didn't see Trump coming the first time. We didn't see him coming this time, and it was pretty obvious he was going to win.
Yeah.
And you know, our polling is wrong. Our analysis is wrong. Our whole approach to it is just too elitist and too partisan. These niche publications, but George Stephanopoulos getting a contract for, you know, $20 million after that gaffe, that's not encouraging. Rachel Maddow getting $25 million for, I think she's on once a week now. What are these big companies thinking? They ought to go back to reporting the news and letting people decide the facts based on their own, and not being gaslighted and, you know, called names and attacked and, you know, subject to, you know, wrong reporting. There's a lot of work to do, Mark.
There is. And, you know, one of the things that I've highlighted here in St. Louis, and this would be a positive, I highlight the negative, so I have to highlight the positive. We have, Carl, we have this unbelievably sad, tragic situation here with our St. Louis public schools and a superintendent that was hired only about 16 months ago that turned a $17 million surplus into a $35 million deficit. Really, really special. And a lot of the credit card usage is outrageous. But there's a reporter at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and I criticized the Post heavily, but they actually did some real reporting and they exposed this. And what I've said in the last week is if it wasn't for that, this would not be exposed. This is why we need good journalism, good local journalism as well. You know, we need this, right? Right now. And there are things, you know, if the Journal didn't do this story this morning, who was going to do it? I'm not so sure anyone would have.
Yeah, well, that's right. You know, and you're right to, I'm glad you brought that up because there was the Dow Prize. It's a new journalism prize. It's $100,000 or by, you know, organized by an immigrant from China. And Susan Crabtree, who works for me, who works for Recovery, yeah, she won it this year, reporting on the Secret Service. But I went to the event, and there was all these displays and all these Dallas Morning News. You know, some of it was legacy papers like the Dallas Morning News. Some of it was, you know, upstart conservative outlets. Some of it was like conservative papers like the Washington Examiner, across the panoply. And there was all this really great reporting. And I realized there still is good investigative reporting being done out there. And that's when we need to do more of it.
Yeah. And look, I give credit to the New York Times and the piece that guy did on the DEI at the University of Michigan. Extensive. He worked more than a year on that story. That was great reporting. Great reporting. So there is, to your point, there's some good stuff happening. Well, listen, Carl, thank you. You know I appreciate it coming on here in St. Louis. Have a great Christmas. Happy New Year. We'll see where the new year takes us in politics.
Yeah, and I'll talk to you in the new year, Mark.
Absolutely. All right, thanks. Thanks, Carl. Take it's my friend's fantastic cat.
Feliz Navidad.
As we continue to mix in the Christmas music here on 97.1 FM Talk. All right, so let me get you the most recent information here on the CR. This started blowing up as soon as I started talking to Carl Cannon. I'm looking at the Twitter here, and I'm seeing that things have changed dramatically when it comes to what this budget bill is going to do. One of the things, you know, I think Carl mentioned Chip Roy. Let me see if I have any Chip Roy audio. But he said this not too long ago. He said, my position is simple. I'm not going to raise or suspend the debt ceiling, racking up more debt without significant and real spending cuts attached to it. I've been negotiating to that, and no apologies. And he carbon copied, or if you will, Twitter copied, Trump, Speaker Johnson, Senator John Thune, and the Freedom Caucus. But what has happened now in the period of just a few days, when the original bill was 1,600 pages, now it's down to 116. Let me see here, because there's new. I don't want to make sure I get you the most recent information. And I don't know. I guess they took all the pork out of this, and it's just going to be what would be referred to, I think, as the clean CR. I tell you who's going to have all kinds of information on this is our friend Dwayne Patterson, who writes for hotair.com. He's going to join us after 5 o'clock. But the information at this point is that this bill is dramatically different. Now, this audio was done before Senator Hawley and others, before this information came out.
This continuing resolution, whatever, it's a total joke. You're right. It is 1,500 pages of pork barrel spending. And worse than that, it's all the woke garbage.
Well, that is part of the problem. John Kennedy.
I saw what you saw. I mean, it's a multiple vehicle pileup. I knew as soon as I saw the bill it was going to be trouble. The thing was as big as a Costco.
One thing I don't understand, I really don't, is how it got to this part. Because there seemed to be an indication, I think I said this earlier, that Trump wasn't involved in this. He has been involved. He's been working with members of Congress. I know that a lot of people, including Chip Roy and others, have been really ripping on Speaker Johnson. He might deserve that. And that's what much of the Twitter sphere has been all about, especially on the conservative side. But, you know, I think there's more to this story. And I'm not quite exactly sure why, for example, if Trump wants the no debt ceiling. I certainly understand Chip Roy's position in we're not going to just hand out no debt ceiling because that's going to lead to more ridiculous spending. Here is Congresswoman Luna.
The fact is that, look, this is a sandwich. I don't know how else to say that.
Let's listen to that one again.
The fact is that, look, this is a sandwich. I don't know how else to say that.
Mike Johnson yesterday.
This is the sausage making process. Okay, here's what this bill entails. It's a short-term funding extension until March 14, and that would have been an easy thing relatively to pass. But here's what happened. We also had to add, and due to circumstances outside of any of our control,
right,
emergency funding. We have two major emergencies.
Well, the problem is, and I think everyone understands the two major emergencies, but what we don't understand is the rest of the pork that got inserted into that. And I guess, like you said, the budget making process is the sausage, and most people have no idea what's going on, and it's very difficult to even describe. But there's been members of Congress, like, for example, Nancy Mace went on a Twitter tear. Section 205, page 133, allow gasoline with up to 15% ethanol to be sold year-round. The subsidy for corn farmers is unrelated to keeping the government open. This is not emergency spending. That should be debated. Is that a good idea? I do not think so. Some people might. The farmers are going to love it. I hate the ethanol stuff. Apology to my farmer friends. But I don't like it because it's forced on the American people. We're not making that choice. And that's part of it. Section 301, page 139, funds censorship by extending the Global Engagement Center. Carl had referred to that. That's outrageous. Shouldn't be in there. Section 1002, page 938, exempts members of Congress from having to enroll in Obamacare. I think that's been around for a long time. Actually, didn't they repeal that? So I don't know why that was stuffed in there. Section 1202, page 328, defines music tourism. Nancy Mace's comment is, not sure what music tourism has to do with keeping the government open. Maybe there's some good music tourism there. Maybe it includes the National Blues Museum here in St. Louis. But the bottom line is, the American people are sick and tired of having all this stuff stuffed in a big package, not being able to take a look at it, examine everything that's in it. And that's what the Republicans have been set to Washington to do. Change the budget process. You can do it now. You have control. Steve Scalise.
There's a lot of moving parts, but the ultimate goal is to get a bill that addresses our immediate needs, but also sets President Trump up for success when he comes into office.
Now, one more cut here, Senator Loomis.
I think that I get the sense that the CR is in trouble. I don't know what the answer is to salvaging it.
Well, we may know more here by the end of the show because the new package is out. We'll see who gets on board with that and how challenging it might be to pass to avoid the government shutdown. My guess is that the government isn't going to shut down. By the way, the other thing about the government shutdown, I think even Elon tweeted about this yesterday. When you say government shutdown, the government doesn't really shut down, right? But look, you don't want members of the military and other things that the left is going to try to scare you and say, the sky is falling. Maybe every once in a while the government does need to shut down just to jolt, shut down to jolt the system. In this case, it looks like they're going to get a deal just in the nick of time. We have Ethan's News coming up. Sue Thomas out all week. I'm not happy about that, but she deserves time off as well. So Ethan will be here in the next hour. Also, Phil Holloway, Fox News legal analyst. One of the things that happened today, there's a lot of things happening in the news cycle. Fannie Willis was disqualified from the Trump election case down there in Atlanta by a Georgia appellate court. Phil is down in Atlanta. He's kind of one of our experts on that case in particular. I know he has some thoughts about the feds invoking more charges in Luigi Mangione's situation. We'll get to that. Joe Warmington from Toronto. Is Justin Trudeau being trumped out of office? That's one of the questions. Dwayne Patterson from hotair.com. Dwayne is amazing. He'll join us in the 5 o'clock hour. And I promise you one thing. He'll be all on top of the CR and the very latest on that. I do want to toss in a little bit of a plug here for the Greek trip because we're going to Greece next year. Mike Kenny, who is my travel guide here. Mike is with DefineDestinations.com. He messaged me yesterday and he said that we have one cabin left. This is going to be an amazing trip. We leave on April 27th, which is a Sunday from St. Louis. We fly on Lufthansa and then we trek over to Athens, spend some days there, go on a beautiful cruise ship that is very intimate. And we start hopping around the islands. It is a magical trip. We're going to focus a lot on food and having fun. We have a great group. One cabin left is what I'm told. If you're interested, a couple of ways to find out information. Go to defineddestinations.com or I would say this is easier. Just go to Google at Mark Reardon KFTK. My Twitter handle is at Mark Reardon KFTK, and you can easily find the details of the trip right there. But if you're thinking about this and you're noodling around here over the holidays, I would suggest acting quickly just because it looks like we only have one cabin left. I say it looks like because there is a chance we can add more, but he's not optimistic about that. Check out defineddestinations.com today.
Get more at 971talk.com.